I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and it's an awesome time to be together. Now, I'm trying to think of something to say other than to say, isn't it fantastic? Because I say that all the time. And people say to me, why do you say fantastic all the time? I don't know. That's a word I like, so I say fantastic. But this is a great time for us to be together. We have a lot to talk about today, as every day seems to be piled up, doesn't it? Like topics on top of topics and things going on in our country, you know, good and bad. It's amazing. So I want to start right off the bat with talking about some of the things that I know listeners here to Chasing Justice know, near and dear to my heart. I have dedicated my life to safety and security, specifically of schools, religious facilities, businesses, and any place where people congregate. That's what my company, True Security Design, does. That's what I've decided to spend the waning years of this fantastic life I've been given trying to do, trying to help people. And we've seen some horrific incidents again. I mean, I guess I could say that almost every week. Every week we could come up with, you know, the next horrific incident. I'm trying my best to get this information out to people to tell you, you can't say it'll never happen here, right? No one can ever say that. That is the most dangerous thing anybody can ever say. Doesn't matter where you are. If there's a place where people gather, that's a place of potential danger. Now, we have to put that in perspective. Before we cover the cases I want to talk about, the reality is we cannot be paranoid. We cannot live our lives waiting every moment for that violent incident to take place, for that active shooter to jump up and come after us. We can't do that. But what we can do is be aware and prepare. These are some of the catchphrases I use all the time. Aware and prepare. So if we're not aware and prepare, not being aware means saying, it'll never happen here, won't happen to me, never happen to my business, never happen to the place I work, my kids are perfectly safe, our school is rural, there's nothing going on out here, we know everyone, everyone's good guy and girl. You know, a couple weeks ago I talked about the attacks on religious facilities and how, along with schools, these are the most innocent places we can possibly be. These are where kids are trying to learn, trying to grow. You know, they should be warm, welcoming places. And instead, sometimes they're turned into killing grounds. This is horrific. It's horrific for our country. I can tell you the answer is not, confiscation of guns, because that's not how this really works. You know, the confiscation of guns is a whole nother argument. And I think that sometimes people's motives for confiscation of guns fits really well with what's going on, but they're really not connected. I think people want to take away the guns for lots of other reasons. Now, let's examine that for 1 second. I really don't want to spend a lot of time on it because, you know, I'm a pro-Second Amendment kind of guy. I've carried a weapon my entire adult life as a law enforcement officer. I carry a weapon now because I'm permitted to do so. And lots of other people are out there doing that. You know, in the Northeast here, it's very difficult to get a carry permit. Almost impossible. Because that's how people here feel about weaponry. You know, in other parts of the country, it's not that difficult. Because people see, you know, the need for a weapon is, as long as you're trained and you know what you're doing with it, you should be trusted with it. You're an American citizen. And we really don't see a lot of crazy gun violence in those communities. Look at the statistics. Go look it up. But it's taking away of people's guns. And we do have some politicians now who are running for president who are outright talking about confiscation of weapons. Sometimes they call them buybacks. You know, we'll buy back everyone's AR-15 because we don't like that they have them. We'll buy them back. Well, what if you decide, I like my AR-15. I'm not going to sell it back. What does that mean? Does that mean they go, oh, well, okay, Joe doesn't want to sell his. Or do you think in reality what it really means is, well, Joe, we gave you the option to sell it back, and now we're going to take it? I think it's number two. I think that's the way those kind of people think about this. Is it hard to make that argument? in the face of a shooting where a weapon is used to kill innocent people. It is. But we have to be honest about these arguments. We can't just say, well, if there were no AR-15s, then that never would have happened. That, I don't think, is an honest... I don't think it's an honest argument. Because if they didn't have an AR-15, which is really just a rifle, a semi-automatic rifle, and it looks real dangerous, looks like an army gun. There are lots of semi-automatic rifles that you can get that don't look so dangerous that are still out there. So people that panic over what they look like, that's the first problem. Obviously, they don't really know weapons. They simply know what it looks like, and it's scary looking, right? But how do you argue in a case like Parkland, if that kid didn't have an AR-15, when he went in there and shot up that school and killed all those innocent people, maybe those people wouldn't have been killed. Okay, so we have to consider that. If he didn't have an AR-15, what if he had some other kind of rifle? What if he had a hunting rifle that, you know, as indelicate as this is, could shoot through several people with the round? A 30-06 round could go through a couple of people, right? If he didn't have that, maybe he would have had another kind of not-so-scary-looking rifle. Or he could have had several handguns. See, so the argument that it was the AR-15 is not really valid. Because I think a lot of these people that go do these things, they're looking at it. You know, you look at it, you see how they dress. This is where an assessment, which we'll talk about later on, of individuals who may be potentially dangerous, we can look at. We know that at some point when they go to do their attack, a lot of them dress like they're dressing for battle. They do. They wear fatigues or dark colored stuff. They put on vests. They bring extra stuff. They're going to war is what these people are doing, and they're dressing for it. So I think in their minds, and I'm not a psychiatrist, I'm just saying this is what I think. I think in their minds, they go out and they get this weapon that everybody's talking about, this AR-15. I'm going to get that dressed in my army clothes, and I'm going to go kill all the people that I have a problem with. Now, that may or may not be the case, but that seems to be somewhere involved in this argument. I think we need to look at it, okay? There are no absolutes, but there are things we can look at and try and figure things out. So, do we confiscate all the guns? I don't think that's the answer, so I say no. We do not confiscate people's weapons. Because really, all you're taking weapons away from is honest, decent people who follow the rules. Who else is going to turn in their guns? Criminals? Okay, guess what, everyone? We're banning all kinds of weapons, all kinds of semiotic rifles. Turn them in. Can you see it at the MS-13 clubhouse? Okay, fellas, we have to turn in our rifles. Do we have to turn in the Uzis? Yeah, turn in the Uzis, too. They're semi-automatic. What about the AK-47s? We got to turn them in? Yep, we got to turn them in, too. We got to turn them all in because, you know, there's a ban now. We can't use them. Does anybody think that's really going to happen? Or how about the street thug who shoots and kills people? Are they going to run into the local police and go, you know what, I was going to use this for a robbery to kill an innocent guy on his way home from work, but now that we have this ban, here's my gun. No, who's going to turn in their guns? The decent, law-abiding individuals. When the law says you have to turn it in, they will turn them in for the most part. Now, I know there's always going to be people out there that say, not unless you're prying it from my cold, dead hands. And I think that's probably what would happen. There would be a boiling point. Because I'll tell you what, I don't want to give up my weapons. I have my weapons to protect myself and my family and anyone around me if I see something bad happening. Taking away my weapon does not make people safer. Taking away my weapon and your weapon makes all of us less safe. I think George Washington actually said, you remember him? You know, one of them horrible founding father guys? Back in the day, he said, the mere presence of firearms everywhere makes everyone safer. And that's paraphrased, but that's what he was talking about. Let's take a look at Venezuela. Those poor people trying to fight for their freedom. Now, we have to also look at, you know, a bigger picture there. We have a dictator, Maduro, and we have this new guy who, I'm going to pronounce his name wrong, Guaida, who just won. Well, Maduro is a communist, and Guaida is a socialist, but at least he's talking about freedom things, and he's better than this Maduro guy. But the bottom line is that the population is disarmed. They do not have any weapons. They were disarmed a while ago. So here they are standing in the streets protesting for their freedom, screaming at the top of their lungs, Libertà, Libertà! And all they have to fight with are Molotov cocktails and rocks. The army has all the guns, the tanks, and the weapons, right? We saw those videos, those horrific videos of people protesting, and whoever it was in that armored personnel carrier who drove over those people, who just drove over the top of them. I don't know how a person could be so involved with what they're doing that they sit there and you see a person screaming, liberty, 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 for their freedom and for the freedom of their country, and you run them over with the vehicle. I don't get that. I hope that never comes to America. I hope it never does. Okay, so enough on that for right now. Now the cases I want to talk about. All right, we had a horrific school shooting, college level, at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. We saw a person with some kind of problems come to school on the last day of class and stand up in the classroom and start shooting people. Now, there's a lot of talk about, you know, the investigation is not complete. We haven't gotten all the information. So right now, we're all kind of taking bits and pieces from what we're hearing. But from what we're hearing, we know it was the last day of class. He stood up and he started shooting people. People died. In that shooting, one of the best America rose. One of the best among us rose. And you never know who that person is going to be. You never know what that circumstance is going to be. You know, it's extraordinary circumstances that reveal extraordinary people. And in this case, you know, we had a young man, 21-year-old young man named Riley Howell, student in that class. And when this killer jumped up and started shooting, Riley had to make a decision. He could duck. He could run. He could have been killed outright. Or he could try and stop that shooter. He tried to stop the shooter. He ran over to him, got in a conflict with him, stopped the shooting, and unfortunately, Riley Howell paid with his life. But how many other kids in that room were saved because of what Riley Howell did? So I salute Riley Howell. And I thank him for his bravery and for the unselfish act that he engaged in to try and stop that shooter. For sure, to try and save himself, he wanted to stop the shooter. But you know what? Have you ever run at somebody with a gun? Not an easy thing to do, ladies and gentlemen. Very scary. But this young man, 21 years old, goes running at the shooter, engages him to stop the shooting, and saved how many lives in that classroom. Every one of us should say a prayer for Riley Howell and then hope that there are more brave people out there, because we're seeing more and more examples of this. But I wanted to make sure I mentioned Riley, because I've seen pictures of the kid. Looks like a gregarious young man, big smile on his face. Looks like a really nice guy. And he sacrificed his life for others. There's no greater thing to do, right, than to sacrifice your life for one's friends? Well, Chief Keir Putney, and I think that's how they pronounce it, said that this kid absolutely saved a lot of people by his actions. And I can only imagine his family and friends how much pain they are experiencing at the loss of Riley Howell. But they should also know that they should be very, very proud of this young man, because his life mattered. We don't always know what our mission is. We don't always have a clear indication of what our mission should be. And I don't know if Riley ever thought of what his mission would be. But that morning, his mission was to save people. And while he lost his life and saved others, I believe that's why he was there that day. He was there to save others. And I think that's the mission God gave him. And I think he'll be welcomed home in the arms of a loving God. What a hero. Right? What a hero. Reminds me of another hero. You know, in the Sandy Hook shooting, there was one of the kids, one of the children, one of the babies in that school, all right, Jesse Lewis. And I think I've told you this story before, but when I learned about Sandy Hook and the school shooting that went on there, and I teach how to survive active shooters, I teach school people, you know, lessons learned from all these kind of things. And one of the most powerful stories that I ever heard was the story of Jesse Lewis. And Jesse Lewis, while he was 6 years old, reminds me a lot of Riley Howell. In the Sandy Hook shooting, when the killer hopped up and started shooting kids in that classroom, at some point he ran out of ammunition and he had to reload. And while he was reloading, little Jesse Lewis stood up and screamed, "Run, run, run." And some of the kids ran out of that room. Maybe you didn't know that. But when I heard that, that told me Jesse Lewis is my hero. Because immediately after reloading, the first thing the killer did was shoot little Jesse Lewis. And he lost his life saving others. So I pictured it at the time. I wrote an article, you know, called "Who Is Your Hero?" Talking about who heroes are in our lives. You know, parents, sports people, friends, whatever. And I had to say that my hero was Jesse Lewis because, you know, I've chased bad guys with guns. I've chased bad guys with knives. I've gone into fist fights with people, you know, that didn't want to be arrested and all of that. And it's scary, but you do it anyway. But to think of a six-year-old kid in the middle of that gunfire to stand up and scream, "Run, run, run." I always imagined that at that moment that, you know, the Archangel Michael was standing behind little Jesse as he called out, "Run, run, run." And after the killer shot that sweet little boy, I always pictured, you know, the Archangel Michael picking him up in his arms and taking him home to heaven. Well, I think the same kind of thing happened with Riley Howell. I think it did. You'll have to excuse me. I get a little emotional about this because these are real hero people. These are people who do real things. These are not, you know, movie stars or, you know, people on a radio show trying to talk to people. These are real people who sacrificed. They're like our military and our cops who really sacrifice for other people. And it's amazing when we see them right in our midst. So here we have a kid in University of North Carolina who shot up his classmates. Now, as time goes by, we'll learn more about him. But I think what we need to find out was, what were the signs of potential problems before he acted out and killed his classmates and before he killed Riley Howell? Because you know what? I'm going to say that there's probably a good chance that some, if not lots of people, knew there was some kind of problem. There was some kind of grievance. There was some kind of social media posting. There was some kind of writing. There was some kind of indication that this kid had some kind of a problem, was potentially dangerous, because there often is. All right, so we're going to get back and we'll talk about some more of this. Then we got to talk about the president and some all the crazy things that are going on in that world. We're going to talk about the new investigations that are about to kick off, where we might actually see some justice. So we'll be back in a minute with round two here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutLoud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming, from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I want to thank everybody out there for listening. You know, we did a shout out last week to a bunch of the people on Twitter, and I want to thank everybody that emails and people that send me, you know, Twitter messages. It's great to be connected to all of you out there. You know, Chasing Justice is part of the America Out Loud Radio Network, which is fantastic. Now, I know if you listen to this show, you say to yourself, "Wow, America Out Loud's pretty good. They let a guy really have his opinion and say what he wants." Check the other shows, is what I'm telling you. The new media package just came out. You got to see how many shows are on this network, the depth of experience that people have, the topics that are on here. are absolutely amazing. So go to AmericaOutloud.com and scroll through, look at some of the other shows, listen to some of them. They're all on podcasts. You can find everything everybody says on the podcast. Absolutely fantastic listening. If you like talk radio and you want to hear people that know what they're talking about, go to AmericaOutloud.com, take a look. There's also articles. There's lots and lots of articles by some of the hosts, by people who just write for the platform. It's outstanding stuff. This is the thinkers. You know, we try to be thinkers and we try to bring ideas out. So go to AmericaOutloud.com, take a listen, take a read. Really excellent. I'm so happy I get to be a part of this and I get to be with you. So in our last segment, we were talking about some heroes. You know, little Jesse Lewis and Riley Howell, and how they were a lot alike, that they sacrificed themselves in the middle of a horrifically violent situation. And we see these things go on and on again. There was just another shooting at the, I'm going to probably say it wrong, the Poway Synagogue in California, where another very strange, bizarre individual showed up there and attacked while people were praying. Okay, people were praying, and this guy came in and started shooting. Now, what I see is as I'm reading articles, and I don't really understand this. You know, this guy, they said he was writing a lot about his Christian faith and how he was very angry with the Jewish community for a whole host of different reasons, and he was taking it out on them. And there was a pastor who said, well, understanding that really gives me a lot of pause to think maybe there was something. There's nothing to it. There's nothing to it. This guy had problems, right? There's nothing in Christianity that tells you hate the Jewish people, hate the Muslim people, hate the people who walk around with flip-flops on their feet. There's nothing in the Christian religion that says to do that, right? It doesn't say to go kill them and you're glorifying God by killing either our Jewish brother and sisters or anybody else out there. So I don't get that a guy is saying a thing like that. You know, as a pastor too, you know, this is one of these guilt things. We feel guilty. Maybe we are somehow responsible. Nothing near responsible whatsoever. You know, go read it yourself. Go see. I've sat in church every week for almost my entire adult life. I've never heard the pastor in any church I've gone to say, and remember, go out and if you can do violence against these people who don't believe like we do, that's a good thing. God will reward you. I've never, ever heard that. I've never heard that. Now, I've heard that in some other religions that I will leave unnamed, but I've never heard it in the Christian religion. So I don't really get that. I think that's bizarre. But here is another house of worship where people are just praying, and this guy comes in and decides he's going to take their lives. But in this instance, we saw that there were some heroes also, right? We saw this hero, and I apologize, I don't have his name for you right at the moment. But he was an off-duty corrections officer, and there was a former, I believe he was a military guy, and he charged him, chased him out the door, and really, as the guy even put in his article, he says, I scared the hell out of him. And I think he did. But he says his military training helped him, and it kicked in. He went to try and help the people. And again, when I said we're seeing this more and more, I think we're going to see more and more, because part of what I do is I help religious facilities to tighten up their security. Once everybody gets in there and they start the service, no matter what kind of service it is, what religion you're at, there's always a point when a service is started and people are engaged in the service. They're praying, they're reading, they're contemplating, whatever. We are very vulnerable at that moment because anybody can pop in. Nobody's paying attention. So there are a lot of things that I tell people to do. Like, once everybody's in, you should have people outside that close the door and latch it. And then the people outside should have radios and they should keep their eyes open and look for anybody showing up. You know, somebody inside should have capability to have a radio and is at the back or the side or up above watching people. Because people don't just, you know, it's not easy to just pull a gun out and start shooting. You have to make a couple of moves because you're trying to hide it. Otherwise, you walked in with a gun, you get caught. So you'd have people who are watching this who could maybe call out or call for help. If they're outside and they're trying to get in while the service is going on, they have to get through those locked doors first. So you have at least a level of protection. So have people outside watching. Give them radios so they can call for help. Have somebody inside. It's a shame we have to do this, but you know what? How many religious facilities have to be attacked before we open our eyes? Before we pay attention? Before we say, hey, maybe we need to do something a little different? Because we can't stop these bad guys. Right? They're going to keep coming. We are the ones who have to say, okay, we can't be paranoid. We have to aware and prepare. Be aware and prepare. Okay? So it's one of those things we need to consider. And the last thing I want to talk about along this line was in Long Island, New York. There's an article out today. And it's been on the major medias also. Three Long Island teens, all three 16-year-old boys from the town of Connecticut, Long Island, apparently were plotting to build a bomb or bombs and attack their high school. Yes, you heard me correctly. Planning to build bomb or bombs and attack their high school. Three teenage boys. Now, they were overheard, apparently on a school bus, talking about this plot. And somebody, one of the kids on that bus, or a bus driver, or an aide, or somebody, went and told the authorities. Said, hey, these kids are talking about doing something. And the police did the right thing. They jumped into action, the Suffolk County Police Departments. They jumped into action. They conducted an investigation. They went to the kids' houses. They did searches. And they found some BB guns. They found some books on how to make bombs. And these kids were arrested. Now you say to yourself, what would make three kids decide to build a bomb and blow up their school with other kids in it? In this face of the world that we got going on, these kids practice locking down. They practice all this stuff. But here they are, planning to build bombs and blow up their fellow classmates. Thank goodness somebody heard something and came forward and said something. So what I want to talk about is how do we do this? You know, we spend so much time teaching everyone how to react, right? When the shooting starts, you should do A, B, C, and D. When you see the guy with the gun and he's bashing through the front door, you should do these things. We should lock down. That's all very, very important, because we can't always physically see the attack coming. Sometimes the attack just erupts, and we had better be prepared mentally and physically to respond, okay? So that's still very, very important. What I'm saying now is we need to look beyond that. We need to say, okay, how do we find some way to identify these potentially dangerous people and their plans and intervene before they hurt anybody? That's the next big thing that we're looking for, a true security design. You know, the Homeland Security people came out with some guidelines last spring that said every school district should have a student threat assessment team. So these are specially trained people who go and respond to any kind of a threat. Now, threats come in many, many different forms. Right now, social media, almost every one of these school shooters has had some kind of a social media presence where they've said things or they've posted things that worried other people, that the kids heard and said, oh, that's really scary, that's weird, I don't like that, but they don't come forward. Similarly, in workplace violences, there were telltale signs that the person was a potential problem, but nobody tells anybody. Or if they did tell somebody, nobody did anything about it, because our system is set up that we really can't do anything until somebody does something bad. Then we can react to it, right? Well, we need to find a way to intervene ahead of time. So one of the things that we're doing at truesecuritydesign.com is we are teaching schools how to set up student-based threat assessment teams. What a student-based threat assessment team does, they're made up of people in your district. Now, if you only have one school, then it would be people from that one school. If you have multiple schools, you might have a couple people from each building, or each building might have its own team, whatever. We can set that up and help you. But these people are trained specifically in how to interpret the social media threats. Okay, those are pretty easy. You know, I'm going to be the next school shooter. I'm going to do this. That's a pretty easy one. We can figure that out. But there are things, and I've told you about them before, where kids will draw things. They'll do drawings that indicate a potential violence. And lots of teachers see them. Lots of other kids see them. And the teachers very often will say, you know, what are you drawing a picture of that guy with a gun shooting that person for? This is school. You can't do things like that. Don't do it anymore. And they leave it be. That has to be examined. That drawing has to be examined, you know, for context. Was the kid just drawing a picture about a news story he heard about the war somewhere, about Venezuela? You know, is he seeing it on the news and he's drawing a picture of it? Or is the kid drawing in the first person and it's him shooting kids in his class because he doesn't like them? All right, so we call this leakage. Leakage is indicators that come out from the shooter or the violent person that leak out from their enclosed little world. And we can see signs of it. So the training that we provide is we come out and we take your people and we teach them how to look at these different threats, how to interpret them, and then how they should respond. What I see lots of schools do is that, and businesses too, for that matter, is that when they find a threat, somebody makes a threat, they deal with it with discipline, or they deal with it with a psychologist, or they deal with it by a suspension. They don't go any further than that. We need to go further. That's why you need a team of people, not just a psychologist in the school, which are great resources to have, you know, very helpful to have those people on your team. But you also need to have teachers, maybe a custodian, an administrator, a sports person that knows all these different kids, and you can start to put together, you know, what do we do? You want to involve, you know, if the district has a legal liaison, you want to have that person involved. You want to maybe have a police liaison on your team from your local police department so that when there's a threat, they can look at, is there a police angle here? You know, if a kid just makes a stupid threat, you know, I hate you all, I'll kill you. All right. Is that the same as saying, I hate you all, and Tuesday I'm going to come to school and kill you all with the gun that I have at home? Two completely different kind of things. So sometimes there may be police involvement in something someone says, and sometimes there's not. So having an officer on your team can be very helpful. Well, what we do is we train everybody in how to do this. We set up the criteria. We help you set up a policy. And then you put that into place so you can respond to any kind of a threat, no matter how it comes in. If it's a written threat, a verbal threat, a rumor threat, a social media threat, anything that comes in, so you can intervene with these kids. Because first of all, you'd be saving a lot of innocent people in your school or your business, because we all work with people. You know, we've all worked with somebody where said, you know, if I had to pick somebody I think would go off, it would be that guy over there, right? Or that girl over there. Because we all know we work with lots of different kinds of personalities, but we don't do anything about it. You know, we tell the boss and they discipline him. Hey, knock it off. Don't talk to people like that. Are you going to get a day off or something, right? Most times they don't even get that. So you need a threat assessment team to be assembled in your school. We can help you with that. TrueSecurityDesign.com. Call me. I can give you, you know, reach out in an email or something. JPengaro@AmericaOutloud.com. I can give you some assistance on how to get the training, whether it's from me or from somebody else. But we all need to do that in our schools. Very important. All right, so when we see that, we say to ourselves, there's two main reasons that kids don't report when they hear about violence. And the two main reasons they give is, number one, they don't want to be a rat. You know, no kid wants to be the person that goes down and says, hey, Bobby says, you know, he's doing this, that Bobby has a kill list. Because what do? We run down and we grab the kid out of class and we say, hey, Bobby, you got a kill list? Harry over here says you got a kill list. That puts Harry in a very uncomfortable position. So Harry doesn't want to be considered a rat. He doesn't want to be the person that told. Because number one, what if he's wrong? What if he misinterpreted what the kid was saying? What if he overreacted? Puts him in a bad position. And the second reason kids say they don't tell anybody, especially, you know, before an incident, is they say there's no one they can trust. And when we look deeper to that, you say, you don't trust your parents, you don't trust the teachers. It's not that they don't trust those people in general. What they normally mean is they don't trust those people to not overreact. You see? Do they run down and start a big thing and involve the kid who said something? And then they point, you know, they call the parents and then the police are there and this kid has to be involved in all of this. And all the kid wanted to do was tell somebody, hey, you're the authorities. This kid's got a list. He's got 10 people's name on he wants to kill. Could somebody please do something about this before he comes in and hurts us? So we have to find ways as the authorities, whether it's in a workplace, whether it is in a school, how do we let people tell us these things without, you know, involving them in stuff that's more than they're willing to do? So an anonymous system would be great. You know, there are apps out there for all kinds of different things. There's this one company called Bridget, BRIDG-IT. I believe that's how they spell it, Bridget. Bridget is an application that goes on phones. It's for schools and businesses. I was amazed by it. I met with the owners, and I said, "Listen, when I go out and I do a threat assessment, I like to have I like to have a lot of stuff in my toolbox, so to speak, that when somebody says, okay, Joe, you talk about an anonymous system. What is something they can use? What can we do? I like to have a handful of these things that I can say, well, I researched these and these look pretty good. So I'm going to tell you, this Bridget is really, it's really brilliant app. What happens is all the kids in the school are on the system. Okay, so all their names are on the system, the teachers' names are on the systems, the administrators are on the system, the kids put the app on their phones, and it does some really cool things. Number one, it allows the school to do instant notification to everybody. They can push out a message to everybody, you know, run, hide, fight, lock down, evacuate, whatever, boop, 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 and it goes to everybody's phone, which is great, on their computers, everything, whatever web device they have, it goes out to everybody, which is great. But the other thing it does, because all the kids are loaded in there, they have a system where the kids can send each other shout outs, so to speak. So basically, and it's not just, you know, for doing good sports or being, you know, the brainiac of the class. There's preloaded things in there so the kids can't come up with, you know, they can't give a backhanded compliment to somebody. Hey, George, really good job on that test with a 60, right? Now, that's not a good thing. But there's stuff on there like, hey, I saw you being kind to somebody. That was nice. Hey, it was really cool the way you stood up in class and said, you know, the Pledge of Allegiance, whatever. There's a whole bunch of these built-in accolades that a kid can, you know, say things to their other friends. They can go on the app and say, I want to pick Mary Ellen Smith, and I want to say, Mary Ellen, you gave a great speech today in school. And she gets that accolade. But what happens is the beauty of this app is that in the background of this, okay, in the background is an algorithm that is starting to show you which kids are getting accolades, which kids are giving accolades, and which kids are getting no accolades or giving no accolades. See, so we start to find out that the dangerous kid can sometimes be the kid who's isolated, who doesn't have friends, who doesn't have a connection to their school. And this app lets the administrator see, hey, you know, Frank doesn't give any accolades, nor does he get any. Maybe we should go and see what's going on with Frank. And then you find out maybe Frank's having some difficulty and you can help him. That's an intervention. See what I'm saying? We need to intervene with these kids for the sake of the children that they would kill, of course, but also for themselves so they don't ruin their lives by doing something horrific. Okay, so I wanted to make sure I covered those instances. When we come back with round three here, we're going to talk about President Trump and the investigations and where they're going next. So thanks for being here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Well, here we go. Round three. Ding, 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 ding. I'm Chasing Justice here in the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I'm thrilled to be here. So let's see. We've covered a lot about the school shootings and about the religious facility shootings and the workplace shootings. We've talked about that. Let's talk about some other fireworks that are going on. You know, we're coming to a kind of a head here. You know, the Mueller investigation came out. You know, what does that look like to you? Now, I tell you, I watch the social media and I see how people are coming out and saying things. Could we be more split down the middle? Did anybody watch those hearings and you see the disrespect that the people on the Democrat side had for the Attorney General or for anybody on the conservative side or the Republican side? It's one thing to have your concerns and to ask questions. That's their job. That's what they should do. They should investigate. But when you're using your time not to investigate, not to understand, not to clarify something that's bothering you, but to use it as a position to just bludgeon someone, to hit them, to smack them over the head, to make ugly statements, that does nothing to improve anything in our country, doesn't answer the questions that they might have, because they're not really asking questions. They had this preconceived notion that Trump did this. They knew it. They knew it. They knew it. They believed it, which is kind of shocking because I don't know about you, but I watched the whole thing. I've written articles about it here on America Out Loud. I've talked about it on several shows. You know, the investigation, to me, as an investigator, was clearly a sham from the very beginning. You know, okay, where was the crime that they were investigating? The special counsel law says there has to be a crime that they investigate. So from what we could tell, there was no crime. There was simply rumors. There was these innuendos. There was all this nonsense. But there was no crime. There was no initial investigation to go, uh-oh, we may have a crime here. And then we have a conflict so that we can't investigate it through the Justice Department. I said a long time ago, and I think I've been proved correct now, after everything we've seen come out since the Mueller report came out, and we see that this was exactly what I said it was in the beginning. This was never supposed to see the light of day. They all assumed that Hillary was going to win, and all of these shenanigans, illegal activities, everything they did behind the scene to try and destroy the Trump campaign was supposed to just go away when Hillary took the oath of office, because then she would run the FBI, she'd run all of it, and it would all just disappear. Unfortunately for them, she did not win, and Trump's people got in there. And now we're starting to see all of this come out. So it was pretty clear that a lot of things were not done properly. One of the things they talk about is the FBI, or any of our intelligence agencies, if they get wind that a foreign power is trying to interfere with an American campaign, say, let's stick with that, campaign running for president, they find out that the dreaded Russians or the Yugoslavians or the Chinese are trying to interfere in the election, and they're going to do it by entering one of the campaigns secretively, by putting an operative into one of the campaigns. And they find out about it, they're supposed to go to that campaign and say, hey, you got to be careful. We got information that people are trying to sneak into your campaign to damage it, to change it, to change the way the election goes. That's what they're supposed to do. They didn't do that in this case. And you know what? People will talk all the time about, you know, connecting the dots. Well, I like Occam's razor. First of all, I just like to say that, Occam's razor. I think it sounds cool to say it, but Occam's razor says, you know, when you have two choices, it's usually the simplest. So this is pretty obvious. Hillary's campaign, along with Obama and the president, President Obama and his administration, decided that Hillary was the person for the job. And when they saw that Trump starting to get some steam, they figured, uh-oh, we have to go out there and, you know, control this. We can't let this guy win. Hillary has to win. She's the one who's going to take over next and continue the Obama legacy. So it doesn't matter whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. It doesn't matter whether you like Trump or don't like Trump. I could stand on a roof and scream this out. Don't you guys and girls get it that are on the other side? It doesn't matter whether you like Trump or not. It doesn't matter whether I liked Hillary. I wouldn't want this to have happened to Hillary if this was the other way around, because that's our government. Whether we like these people or not on one side or the other, they're all our people. We're all Americans. You can't have, you know, one side doing illegal things like this. That changes the nature of who we are. Then we don't have a republic. We don't have a democracy in our country. We don't have the freedom to be who we are as American people, because it's completely out of our hands. So what they tried to do with this investigation was they tried to steer things, affect the election. And once Trump got in and won, they wanted to destroy him to get rid of him. This is just as bad as a foreign power coming in to do this to us. These were our own people. Because you know what? Lots and lots of people voted for Trump. Lots of people wanted a change. Enough people voted in enough of the states that he won the election. Okay? He won the election by the means we have set up, and he becomes the president. That means If you don't like him, you don't like his policies, in 4 years, guess what? You get to vote for somebody else. You get to convince people to vote a different way and get Trump out of office. We don't do it by lying, by cheating, by using the power of the government against an individual citizen and then against someone who was elected president of the United States. Do you realize the danger that is for all of us? Now, I've said this. I've said this before. You can't fight the government. You know, there's an old saying, you can't fight City Hall. You can't fight City Hall. You don't think if they wanted to turn that power against you, that they wouldn't do it? That they couldn't do it? We cannot let this stand. And what this all comes down to, and what this all clearly shows, is that this whole thing was corrupt from the beginning. This was a plot to put Hillary into the White House, no matter what, to win that election, to affect the election. And then once Trump won and they were shocked, then it was to destroy him and his administration so that they could put somebody else in there and then eventually, you know, get back into power. I was right about this. As an investigator, I saw the handwriting on the wall. I think it goes much, much deeper than we know right now. You know, now they're starting to backtrack. We saw Bob Barr the other day. You saw the attack on Attorney General Bob Barr. Now, I don't know him personally. I remember him as the Attorney General back in the day. Everything we heard about him was that, you know, he squared away, squared away, squared. Didn't we hear that about Mueller? Greatest guy on the planet, greatest guy on the planet. Until he came up with an answer that the Democrats didn't like. Then suddenly he's hard. He's as bad as Judge Kavanaugh. You know, that miscreant that got through the system. Unbelievable how they attacked him. This woman from Ohio. I'm sorry, not Ohio. This woman from Hawaii up there. We know you're like Rudy Giuliani. We know you're this and that. You've given up your credibility and your integrity. Are you kidding me? The man is doing his job. So Mueller puts out that report that says they could find no evidence that the Trump campaign colluded in any way with the Russian government. That was the reason that they had the special prosecutor. All right, that was the first, well, that was the stated reason. The second reason was to go after him and find something that they could get him on and impeach him. And they still may do that because they have that power to do it. But the second part, the obstruction. Now, granted, you don't have to have a crime to have obstruction. They could say, listen, we're going to have an investigation into who ties their shoelaces right shoe first in the White House because we think that's criminal. And we're going to have an investigation. As ridiculous as it sounds, go with that. And the president could say to everyone, listen, lie. Tell them you wear loafers. Lie. Tell them you don't wear shoes with laces. Tell them you wear pre-laced shoes. That's what I want everybody to say. Even if they didn't do nothing wrong, they're now obstructing the investigation by telling people to lie. You know, see those 10 documents over there that I put out that I signed that tell you all how to tie your shoes? Tie your right shoe first? Destroy them. Give me all them. Let's burn them. Tear them up. Let's shred them. Get rid of the evidence. That is obstructing. Even if there was no crime, because there's no crime for tying your right shoe first. Do you see what I'm saying? I'm using an absurd kind of an example to kind of point out that there can be criminality in an obstruction. But what they're counting is that the president was coming on and saying that this was a witch hunt. You know why he kept saying that? Because he didn't do anything, and he knew he didn't, and he saw all the power of the media, and he saw the Democrat Party and all these people coming after him for something he knew he didn't do. So was he as articulate as he should have been? Was he as circumspect as he should have been? No. He was angry. He was mad. He was frustrated. So he kept going out and saying, this is a witch hunt. He was defending himself. So while the report can certainly look at all these different instances of things that they're saying he did, he was completely open. He gave them all these documents. We've all heard this. He gave millions of documents. He let everybody testify. He didn't stop anything. He didn't interfere with the investigation at all. So there was no obstruction. Now, what they're focusing on is this guy, McGahn, who worked for him, worked for the president. And apparently he said, I want you to go down the hallway and have him fired. Well, the president is the one who fires people. And I'm sure he could order that guy, McGahn, you go down the hallway and you make sure that Mueller is fired. The fact is, it didn't happen. So who was he trying to obstruct? He wasn't obstructing the investigation. He let the guy go talk and testify. He testified for 30 hours. So it doesn't matter what he said in the White House. He could have stomped his feet up and down and said, I'm not participating. I'm not going to let anybody participate in this. I'm not giving them the papers. I don't care what they say. The fact is, he let them testify. He gave them the papers. He did everything they need. He did not obstruct the investigators. See, talking about obstructing is not obstructing. And this is what our Democrat friends are trying to make cases out of, because you know what? They don't have anything else. They've been caught with their hand in the cookie jar. They set this whole thing up to go after Trump and the Trump administration, and they never thought anybody would see it. They thought it would be able to be wiped away, and it wasn't. And now, I think a lot of people are going to get in trouble. As I've said before, and I hate to keep saying it, Bob Barr has an opportunity now to be a hero of American justice by coming out and saying, damn the torpedoes, we're going to lay this out, and if there was crimes committed, we're going to indict them. As far as Hillary, you know, when James Comey came out and he said he laid out everything she did illegal, lots and lots of illegal things she did, and said, but we don't think she had intent to do it. So therefore, no prosecutor would prosecute. We all knew that was BS, because how many of these former federal prosecutors came forward, including Giuliani, and said, I would have indicted her immediately on the first thing she did. So that was all a fixed investigation too. This whole thing has been fixed from the beginning. I keep saying we're being played. We are being played. My fear is that they're going to make it go away, all of them. The deep staters, all of them on the right and the left, are going to say, okay, this is going to get really ugly. A lot of us are going to get caught up in this nonsense. Maybe we should just make it go away. I heard a conversation today where people were talking about this. What do we do about Hillary? Maybe we everyone would be really upset if they really went after Hillary and indicted her on what she did. Maybe we should stop it before it gets to her. Are you out of your mind? You got to be kidding me. With what she did illegal, they should go back. The Attorney General should take a couple of his investigators and prosecutors and say, here's the case file from the Hillary case that Comey and all those people investigated. I want you to go over with a fine-tooth comb. I want you to see if the evidence that they uncovered there is indicative of someone committing a crime. And if it is, I want you to impanel a grand jury, and I want you to present that stuff to the grand jury immediately. And if they come back with an indictment, then we start locking people up. That's what he should do. Right? You and I wouldn't get away with any of that. So we say in obstruction, and I gave you example before, if you know, they were going after the president for tying the right shoe first, and he said, hey, get rid of those shoelaces, destroy them, get rid of the notes I wrote that tells you all that you should start with your right, that would be obstruction. In Hillary's case, do we have anything like that? Well, let's see. She got to testify without being under oath. She got to testify without any documentation of the interview, of what she said. She got to have her devices, her electronic devices that had her emails maybe on there, smashed and destroyed with knowledge of the FBI. She got to destroy the servers and clean them. That is all on face value indicative of obstructing an investigation. Now, she was obstructing a fake investigation. See, that's the problem. They were not conducting a real investigation. They were not about to go, hey, look at all these things she did. Oh, my gosh, she can't be the candidate. She's got to go to prison for what she did. Instead, they said, we got to get rid of this. We have to do some kind of a sham investigation here and clear her, because we can't have this happen. And unfortunately, that is exactly what they did. And they almost got away with it, ladies and gentlemen. They almost got away with it. But what kind of country would that be if they get away with this? If we end up hearing some nonsense about, well, it would cause too much pain to the country to charge her at this point. We find that she did do all these things, but we decline to prosecute because it'll cause too much difficulty. Really? Would they say that to you if you get caught up? Are you going to be able to pull the Hillary defense? This is really going to upset my family and all my friends if you prosecute me. Oh, well, in that case, we're not going to prosecute you. This is so important. We are living at a time in our country that we are witnessing probably the biggest test to our form of government that there has been since the Civil War. The Civil War, which almost tore us in two, this has that potential. And I've been trying to sound the horn for the last couple of years about this in all my columns and on this show here on Chasing Justice. And when I go on other shows, I talk about it. It is so important for all of us to pay attention here and to demand that something be done. I'm seeing indications that Attorney General Barr is going to investigate this. I'm just concerned that at the end, they're going to clear it so that they clear, you know, the elite among us. So they clear, let's just clear this out, start with a fresh slate. You will see CNN, NBC, all these left-wing channels, will they all get the message? Okay, we're done with this. We're not going to talk about it. It's over. It's whitewashed. Let's move on to the next thing now. And all of a sudden, all these stories will drop. We won't see any of these people. And that'll be the end of it. And you know what that leaves us in? That leaves us clearly in a position for this to happen again. This abuse of our law, of our Constitution, and of you and me as American citizens. If this is not handled properly, that is what's at stake here. There is nothing more important than making sure this is adjudicated properly. We were all played and we were abused as American citizens. And that's not right. If we don't fix this, it's always going to be there in the background for the next person to do it. The model will be laid on how to get away with doing something like this to the American people, to making our Constitution a nice piece of paper behind a glass case somewhere in Washington, but not something that we can live our lives by. So ladies and gentlemen, I've enjoyed this session with you here on Chasing Justice. Thank you all very much for listening. Thank you to the entire network for having me on here. I'd love to hear from you. jpangaro@americaoutloud.com. You can certainly reach out anytime, or at Pangaro Global on Twitter. So go ahead on there and become my friend. You follow me, I'll follow you, that kind of thing. Let's stay in touch, because democracy is ours to protect. It's falling to us now. It's our turn to protect our country. We must demand that the right thing happen. Remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. We'll see you next week on Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network.